In June, Michigan news was topped by the impact of several U.S. Supreme Court rulings. All have particular relevance for our state, and the state's road funding discussion continued with yesterday's news of a Senate proposal that would include new gas tax revenue. Let's take a look back at the month with our two state capitol reporters. Rick Pluta is the Capitol Bureau Chief for the Michigan Public Radio Network, and Emily Lawler covers the Capitol for MLive. Great to have you here again, guys.
Yeah,
about a week ago, Rick, Senate Majority Leader Arlen Meekhoff told you and me and our current state listeners on this program that he believes new revenue needs to be part of a long-term road funding solution. Yesterday afternoon, we learned about just such a proposal. Tell us about it.
Well, it seems like, and that was no secret that we knew that after the House acted and this headed over to the Senate, that it was the House was going to sort of deal with the cuts aspect of it, and the Senate was going to deal with the revenue aspect of it.
Okay.
And basically, the idea is to link an increase in the fuel tax. Emily, 19 cents?
I believe
over a few years.
Yes. And then you link it to a rollback in the income tax rate, which a few Senate Republicans, tax policy chair Jack Brandenburg in particular, that's sort of been their holy grail to get the income tax rate back to 3.9% somehow.
And where does sales tax revenue go in our state? Obviously, we're I suppose a cynic would say we're robbing Peter to pay Paul here, so we would increase
it would be
road
a,
revenue.
It would be a net, and it would be a fuel tax increase, not a sales tax, and it would be a net revenue increase. But there are still cuts that are part of it to reach that magic number that Governor Rick Snyder set of $1.2 billion, and there's the question, still of where that would come from.
Any response so far, Emily? What have you heard?
I mean, we're looking forward to the response because this is officially kind of being discussed today, right. And we could see some action.
Still officially unofficial.
It's still officially unofficial, but the details are, slowly, I think, being confirmed by different people. And as they trickle out, I'm interested to see which of them kind of form into the core of the plan here.
And how much resistance would you anticipate in the House, let's say, to a plan that would increase revenue?
Zero resistance to rolling back the income tax rate.
Right. And, but I mean, there's a certain core of members who aren't going to vote for any sort of tax increase. So, you have to kind of discount those, see who you can get on board, see if you can get Democrats to play along, and, it becomes a math game, really.
Yeah, no, and that's exactly what it is. And, we often, speak about and think about the legislature as if it's an it, when in fact it's a they. And very often, what you do when you're putting together a plan like this is you come up with something that gets you a few more votes over here, but that means that you lose votes over there. So in the end, you've got to make sure that it's a net, whatever you do, that it's a net gain in votes. And a lot of stuff that you do to get enough Republicans on board are going to be things that don't necessarily attract Democrats, things that you do to get Democrats on board to make up for Republicans, like you said, Emily, who will never, ever vote for a tax increase, are things that may lose you more Republicans. And, nothing moves ahead in the legislature unless it's got, a critical mass within the majority caucuses of the House and Senate.
Where are the Democrats in this discussion? Where are they likely to be? And where would the governor be on a plan like this? Can we read anything into this?
Well, it seems like the plan that the Senate's going to come up with is going to be slightly above what the governor had asked for. At least that's the starting number. I'm sure that's a little
more than $1.2 billion.
Yeah, I think $1.4 was the number I've seen. So, the governor has got to be pleased with this. Obviously, that number could move a little bit in either direction. The Democrats they have to be more amenable to whatever the Senate's doing than what the House did, because that touched the earned income tax credit, which is, pretty near and dear to their hearts. And I think that the Senate plan has a better chance of picking up support from Democrats, depending on how they go about it, than the House plan did. Mm-hmm.
But remember, too, that if, a rollback in our flat tax rate is part of the plan, then that you know, goes sideways with a bunch of House Democrats who are talking about not just an income tax rollback, but switching to a graduated income tax. And you can expect them to try and force that into the discussion.
Little interesting historical footnote here as well. Tim Skubick wrote in his MLive column today that Governor Jennifer Granholm hoped to reduce the state income tax.
Before she left office,
she was unsuccessful, and Skubick pointed out, wow, Arlen Meekhoff might assist Governor Granholm in lowering
that was a deal that she made a deal with Senate Republicans when she was governor to help avert a shutdown or to end it, that included that increasing the income tax rate with the assurance that eventually it would come down. What failed to transpire, though, was an economic recovery that made that possible. So that, you know, that was the background on that, and subsequent legislatures, Republican legislatures, were, you know, also unable to fulfill that promise. And remember, Rick Snyder, one of the first things he did as governor with a Republican legislature was delay that rollback in order to balance the budget.
Rick Pluta of the Michigan Public Radio Network, Emily Lawler of MLive here on Current State's Month in Review for June. Several Supreme Court decisions in recent days have had particular impact on Michigan and involved Michigan directly. Same-sex marriage, of course. Federal subsidies to Obamacare participants will continue. Let's revisit the most recent ruling, though. From yesterday, which involves EPA mercury regulations. It was Michigan versus the Environmental Protection Agency. What was the court ruling on exactly, Emily?
So Michigan had argued that when taking into account whether or not they should regulate mercury emissions from power plants, the EPA should have taken cost into account as far as, you know, the kind of a cost-benefit analysis of, like, how much is it going to cost the power plants to regulate this? How much is it going to cost in human health if we don't do this, the environmental costs? And what had happened was the EPA had taken all that into account, but much later in the process. What the court eventually said is that they should have taken cost into account before even deciding whether or not they wanted to regulate power plants. So, you know, environmental advocates aren't happy with this because it sets back these mercury regulations potentially, but you know, it's a big win for Bill Schuette, who was arguing this in his brief. So.
Here is how Andrea Bightley, the press secretary for Michigan Attorney General Bill Schuette, summarized this.
The court agreed with our opinion that we must find a constructive balance in protecting both the environment and continuing Michigan's booming economic comeback.
How was it Michigan led this effort, Rick?
Bill Schuette was first.
Okay.
There were some, I think, 30 states in the...
I think there were 26 with Bill Schuette on his side,
and so a handful
on the other side.
Michigan was the lead state in the challenge, and, you know, Bill Schuette was kind of first out of the gate, which is, you know, and as a friend of mine pointed out, you know, suing Barack Obama's EPA is not a bad thing for an attorney general, a Republican attorney general who may have higher aspirations. The impact of the ruling on the mercury rule, though, is probably going to be de minimis. We will in all likelihood not get a rule that is too terribly different than the one that's there right now. It may have an impact certainly as the EPA develops new rules on carbon emissions and things like that. And as a matter of fact, in Michigan, we already have a state mercury rule that virtually matches the federal rules, so that won't change. And Emily, I think you had the same conversations with utility people that I did that said that this changes little or nothing in terms of how the state's going to go forward. Right. If you want to talk about something that's going to have an impact on the availability and cost of energy in Michigan, look to what the legislature is doing.
Who'd you talk to, Emily?
You know, there's been a couple of people. I've talked to a lawyer who's kind of tried to give me some background on this, and obviously the utilities have been sending out statements. We've gotten statements from environmental groups, and, you know, I think the bottom line is that it's not bound to have a huge immediate impact, because even if the mercury rule ends up being delayed or the rulemaking process has to go over again, which we still have yet to see, it's been remanded to lower court. But, you know, a lot of utilities have already been planning for this. So, you know, they've made the capital investments. They're already moving in this direction, and they know that a rule is going to come out at some point. I don't know why they'd undo that progress.
And remember, too, that, you know, if you want to reduce, this touches on what you just said, Emily, that if you want to reduce mercury emissions, one of the best things you can do is not stop burning coal. And so right now, we've got, I think, 19 coal burning plants in Michigan. The newest one was built in 1985. Some of them are being, you know, retrofitted, so they're not as polluting. But the fact is, right now, natural gas is less expensive. It's a cleaner burning fuel, so it's less regulated. So less expensive, less regulated. You know, utilities are moving to natural gas.
And the seven power plants that were scheduled to shut down are still scheduled to shut down.
Mm-hmm.
Same-sex marriage is now legal in the United States, as you reported yesterday, Rick. Richard McClellan's commission, the Michigan Law Revision Commission, has been looking into how the hundreds of references to marriage in state law may need to be changed. Here is Mr. McClellan sharing some of the areas that would be impacted.
Property, children, divorce, estate planning, inheritance, those kinds of things. Admission to hospitals to see your spouse.
Rick, what lay ahead here? What impact could these revisions have?
Well, I guess the question is, will the legislature treat this as a technical requirement to bring the state into compliance with the Supreme Court marriage ruling, or will it become a new opportunity to, you know, again, light the fuse on the culture wars?
And well, what role does the legislature have here, then?
They have a key role. The Law Revision Commission can do is make recommendations, and then it's up to the legislature and the governor to, act on those recommendations.
Yeah, I'm sure that there are little things that we have to find out about how this law is going to be implemented. Another question from the business community is, if they already have domestic partner benefits, should they move over and just give married couples benefits because now everyone can get married? And that could impact straight people who are using domestic partner benefits. It could impact gay people who don't necessarily want to go get married just because the Supreme Court said they should. So.
Well, the state of Michigan has a domestic partner benefit policy, 100 something people are on it. It's not huge, and not all of them are people who are in romantic relationships. That it's called another eligible adult.
Okay.
And the state has no plans to change it. Change it right now.
How much work lay before the Law Revision Commission? Is this a process that could drag out for a long time?
Do we
know?
I mean, I guess the question is, you know, how many parts of the state code, all the state public acts touch on marriage, and how far do you have to dive into them to find that? And, you know, how many instances do we have where the law refers to a husband and wife versus, you know, a spouse or something else? And so,
Back to the Supreme Court ruling, though, on same-sex marriage. What has generally, Emily, how have Michigan conservatives responded to the Supreme Court ruling?
I think my number one adjective would be slowly. Bill Schuette waited, I think, an hour or more before putting out a statement on the ruling, and that even though he had, argued one of the related cases. And,
we
haven't.
But they had to read the decision. I mean, an hour is a pretty reasonable turnaround for something like that.
All I'm saying is I got all the Democratic statements immediately. It's much easier to issue statements if you've won something.
Mm-hmm.
Carrie Moss, executive director of the Michigan ACLU, wrote in yesterday's Detroit News that he fears more religious.
She,
I beg your pardon. She fears more religious freedom laws. What actions are in play?
Well, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act for Michigan, that bill is still laying out there. The Republican leadership in the House and the Senate have said they would like to do that. Rick Snyder has remained adamant that he would not sign that unless it's accompanied by something that adds LGBT protections in the state's civil rights law. So, you know, at the moment, the legislature's leadership has been, we're not going to send something like that to the governor just to, just to have him veto it. There are certainly bills being introduced to do things like, you know, take judges and local clerks out of the at least the officiating end of marriage. But
Senate Bill 4 here, though, I want to bring this up, and Carrie referred to this in the column yesterday. This could reportedly allow a man to claim that domestic and child abuse laws don't apply to him because of religious teachings, that a husband has the right to discipline his family. This is according to Kerry Moss.
Well, this has been a part of the argument over, you know, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act and how, you know, just how far can you, can you take these particular interpretations, and would that, you know, trump child abuse laws for example? Classically, they do not. But, I mean, it's always part of the debate, which is if you do that, you know, what is the furthest end that you could take it to?
But our conservative, supporters of same-sex marriage are considering the Supreme Court ruling as momentum, I think, to exert
right.
more pressure on the legislature to amend Elliot Larson. Mm-hmm. What impact is that having on conservatives? I mean, are they more likely to double down on religious freedom kind of measures, more apt to resist, or what?
Yeah, you know, I haven't seen that. I haven't seen kind of a doubling down or an anxiousness to be out first on this, really, from conservatives who oppose the ruling. But, you know, Elliot Larson would affect a much greater number of Michiganders, because it would affect all LGBT people and also all perceptions of LGBT people. Right now, you know, you can
depending
be fired.
On how it was written.
Right, right. But, right now you could be fired for people thinking you're gay. You don't even necessarily have to actually be gay. And this only, you know, the Supreme Court ruling affects couples who want to marry, which is a much smaller subsect of the LGBT community.
You know, really the bigger pressure on the legislature to do something about Elliot Larson, I think, would be the prospects of a ballot campaign, in 2016 or 2018 to add it than, anything that's actually happening inside the process.
Very good. We want to thank both of our guests, Rick Pluta of the Michigan Public Radio Network, Emily Lawler of M Live. I had more questions than we had time to address, but many thanks for your perspective.
Thank you.